عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء وسيد المرسلين وحبيب الله العالمين أبي القاسم محمد وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين، لا سيما مولانا وسيدي صاحب الأصل والزمان روحي وأرواح العالمين له الفداء، وأجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف ولعنة دائمة على أعدائهم ومنكر فضائلهم من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين. ما بعد، رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. We continue in our analysis this Ramadan 2017 with Surah Al-Qalam, chapter number 68 of the Noble Quran. And today in part 6 of our discussion, we want to begin the theme, and this will run for a few sessions, on keeping away from people of bad character. As we've been looking at this surah, we've seen a lot of different issues already that we've covered, beginning with the huruf al-muqatta'at. We looked at the accusations that people used to level against Rasulullah. And at this point of the surah, Allah changes the focus and the attention to look at certain character traits, certain ethical traits, which have been very severely reprimanded within the Quran. And tonight our discussion will focus on verses number 8, 9, and 10. In general, however, verses 8 to 16, of which the first part of our discussion will be tonight, it focuses on 10 negative ethical traits. These are traits which we will see are things that we have been told, as we'll see in this verse, that we need to keep away from people who have these particular traits. But also, and probably equally as important, is the fact that we need to ensure that we ourselves don't have these traits within our own selves. And this is a constant thread within the Quran. Many times people, Muslims, we read the Quran and we see the past generations and how Allah reprimanded different communities in the past. And sometimes as Muslims, we have this habit of pointing fingers at other communities in the Quran. And we say, see, Allah talked about this particular group or that group, how bad they were, how deviant they were, how corrupt they were. But we don't realize when we point fingers at another group that fingers are pointing back at us. And so as important as it is to look and reflect on the history in the Quran of communities that came before us and where they fell, where they slipped, where they made mistakes, it's important for you and I to also read those same verses and reflect if we as individuals or community, if we are doing the same things within our day-to-day life. And because obviously if we are doing those things, then we will also be held to account just as those previous nations were held to account. Let me now go to the three verses that I want to look at very briefly this evening. Allah begins in verse number 8 by saying, أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ. He says, فَلَا تُطِعِ الْمُكَذِّبِينَ وَدُّوا لَوْ تُدْهِنُوا فَيُدْحِنُونَ وَلَا تُطِعْ كُلَّ حَلَّافٍ مَهِينٍ. It's a very deep and very profound collection of verses, although we see that the English, or the Arabic rather, is very small. Not many words in the Arabic, maybe about 12 or 13 words in total in these three verses, but the translation and the explanation is where really the substance comes out in what Allah is conveying to us. So the very first verse, Allah says, فَلَا تُطِعِ الْمُكَذِّبِينَ. Now here, keep in mind, Allah is specifically addressing Rasulullah, being him being the recipient of the Quran. And he tells the Prophet, فَلَا تُطِعِ الْمُكَذِّبِينَ. So do not listen to those who reject the truth, those who are rejecting your invitation to Islam, those who are rejecting the Quran and your prophethood. Then Allah says, وَدُّوا لَوْ تُدْهِنُوا فَيُدْحِنُونَ. These people, the people who are, you are told not to listen to, who are rejecting the truth, Allah says that those people wish for you, the Prophet, to compromise in matters of your religion, in your faith, and that you not condemn their evil deeds. And so in return, that they too would adopt a conciliatory attitude towards you and Islam. And in the third verse, Allah says, وَلَا تُطِعِ الْكُلَّ حَلَّافٍ مَهِينٍ. In continuation, Allah says, do not listen to any wretched swearer. Now, obviously, the translation that I have given is an explanatory translation. It's not word for word. Because of the fact that the words which Allah is using in this verse, in this collection of verses, there is no real direct word-for-word equivalent. And we'll see this when I go through the explanation. And so I'm forced to give it an explanatory translation so that we can understand what Allah is telling the Prophet. In essence, Allah is drawing on two characteristics of people whom the Prophet should keep away from, and again also as an extension for you and I. The first one, as Allah says, is those who reject the truth, and then Allah gives us a description of what they do. And then the second one is that do not listen to those who are the wretched swearers. Swearers here being people who take an oath and who do not fulfill that oath or that promise. So the first thing that I want to touch upon is the first group of people, those who are, as Allah calls, the mukathibin. Those who I define as people who are belligerent rejectors of the message of Islam. And what we have to appreciate, especially living in the 21st century, is that when we look outside of our centers, outside of our religion, we have people outside, some people who are actively against Islam. You know, they'll have rallies, they'll have protest marches, they'll burn Qurans, they will try to provoke the Muslims. That's one group of people, and we have to deal with that group in a specific way. The other group of people, which are maybe the vast majority of people out there today, are those who are not belligerent. They don't mean us any bad. They sincerely don't know about Islam. All they know about Islam is what they see on news, what they see in the media, what they see on the internet. And unfortunately, what they see is a very bad representation. They see people who call themselves Muslims and who commit actions against the very ethos of the religion. So the vast majority of people, I like to think, are not those who are openly working against the religion. They just don't know. They only hear stories. They see things happening by people who claim Islam, and they think that this is what the religion is all about. Those people are a separate category. Allah tells us even in the Quran that those people who mean you no harm, who don't expel you from your home, who don't fight you because of religion, there's no problem to have friendly, cordial ties with those kinds of individuals. But in this verse where Allah tells the Prophet, فَلَا تُطِعِ الْمُكَذِّبِينَ, he's talking about those people who actively are working against the religion of Islam, who are actively working to destroy this religion that the Prophet had brought. So 2 points I want to bring from this verse where Allah says this concept of not following, not accepting the people who are trying to, you know, destroy this religion. The second verse, number 9, which gives us this description where Allah says, وَدُّوا لَوْ تُدْهِنُوا فَيُدْهِنُونَ. What this basically means is that there were people at the time of Rasulullah, as there are today, who wanted the Prophet and who wanted the Muslim community to accept and condone their immoral lifestyle. And in turn, what they said to the Prophet is that you accept our gods, you accept our way of life, you accept our system of governance, and we'll accept yours. And we've all heard this story that when the non-believing Quraysh, when they came to Rasulullah, they said that, you know, you've taken all of our gods and you've, you know, destroyed all of them. Why don't we come to a compromise? We'll worship Allah and you worship Allah and our gods, all the other idols. And we know that Surah Kafirun came down, which told the Prophet to tell the disbelievers that I don't worship what you worship, you don't worship what I worship, and so on and so forth. And so the Prophet made it clear to the Quraysh, to the polytheists, that there is no compromise in Islam. There's nothing that can say, well, today we'll worship Allah, this week we'll worship Allah, we'll pray, we'll fast, and then next week we'll follow your religion, we'll worship the idols, we'll do this, we'll do that. No, the Prophet brought this religion, which was a continuation of previous religions that came from the noble prophets, and it was to ensure that all of the false beliefs, the false practices, false ideologies were removed completely from the mind of the people. Today we see a similar situation. We have people in our societies today, not only non-Muslims, but unfortunately even so-called Muslims, people who look like Muslims, people who have Muslim names, who might even pray, might even fast. And what they want to do is begin to change the religion. They say we need to westernize Islam. We need a Western Islam. We need to secularize Islam. You know, we have to have a secular version of religion. Let's have religion in the masjid, in the mosque, but outside we don't follow the religion. You know, people are today even calling, and they've been calling for this for, you know, 30, 40 some odd years, but more so nowadays. People are calling for a rereading of the Quran. If not a rewrite of the Quran, at least a reread of the Quran, to make it fit with a liberal, secular ideology that the West would be, you know, completely happy with. This again was not only the time of the Prophet, this is happening even in the 21st century. So-called Muslim intellectuals are writing books, commenting on Islam, saying that the Quran has to be, you know, some verses even of the Quran, some so-called scholars are saying that these verses of the Quran are no longer pertinent in the 21st century. How do we get rid of these verses? How do we remove these? Because they don't fit with our Western democratic secular values. You know, and there are many examples in the Quran like this. You read the story of Nabi Lut alayhi salam and the debauchery his people were involved in. And Muslims today come and say, you know what, there's nothing wrong with what they were doing. It's just the methodology that they used. And so they try to reread these verses of the Quran on many different aspects. If not removing them and rejecting them completely, at least they want to change the verses to fit with a secular ideology of what religion should be. We know that at the time of Rasulullah, he had no, you know, he would have none of that. Quran is coming from Allah. Just because the people don't understand the verses, it doesn't mean it doesn't fit with human understanding. And even today, if we don't understand the verses of the Quran and we say, well, in a secular society, we have this and this rule, and Quran says this, well, you know, it doesn't make sense. We have to realize that the Quran has to go over all other books. You know, we have so many examples. I'll give you just one very brief example. Is even this topic of inheritance. We talked about it in a session we had a few months ago about how to write a will. How much every family member is entitled to get according to the religious rulings. People, not in this community, but people ask, well, you know, husband and wife and two kids are there. The kids are very well off. The husband passes away. He wants to give everything to the wife because they feel that the wife deserves it. Now, there are legal loopholes, as we talked about in the sessions, that you and I can legally use to change how much each person gets by using the Sharia methodologies. But for somebody to say, well, I don't think my relative needs this much money, I'm not going to give it to them, this is a problem. And they'll say, well, in secular society, the inheriting or the spouse that is inheriting, they get everything. And so we should follow that. No, we shouldn't follow that. Just because the West does it, it doesn't mean that it's the right way, the proper way. Yes, it's a law that they have, but that doesn't mean that Muslims need to follow that. There are obviously nuances in the laws. There are reasons why Allah put certain things within the Quran. There are certain reasons why Rasulullah and the Imams did things in a certain way. And so if we want to stay true to our ideology, we need to follow those ways that the Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt have explained to us as have been embodied in the noble Quran. Salu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. The third verse, verse number 10, is where Allah talks about and He gives these two qualities, halaf and maheen. The word halaf, as we see, it means a person who takes many oaths. They promise to do certain things, whether they're big or small, and they usually don't live up to their promises. So this is one trait Allah is telling us. And the second trait in the same verse is maheen, which we understand or translate as something of inferiority or insignificance.
And scholars also say this word means somebody who doesn't think a lot before they speak. You know, or a person who is a liar, or one who is openly a sinful person. So all of these explanations can be put together. And so what Allah is saying in this third verse, when he says, وَلَا تُطِعْ كُلَّ حَلَّافٍ مَهِينٍ, again, my explanatory translation of it, is that he's talking to the Prophet, obviously, but he's extending that to you and I also until today. Do not obey or accept the statements of people who like to make false promises, like politicians. That's my explanation, obviously. That's not in the Quran. Especially those who are involved in international affairs, both Muslim or not Muslims. And especially those who don't think much and are quick to speak, or quick to tweet, like some people like to do. They tweet at strange times of the night, strange things which have no, you know, they haven't thought about them, but they just like to tweet things. I don't know who does that, but I'm sure there are examples in history. And they're habitual liars. So Allah is showing us that there are people like this that you need to be aware of. And they have to be called out for who they are, right? They make false promises. We want peace. You know, I think we can have a two-state solution. You know, they make all of these false promises to the world. And as Muslims, unfortunately, many of the Muslim communities around the world and governments, they become so gullible and susceptible to these kinds of false promises, they believe them, right? As the verse also says, that those who don't think much and are quick to speak. We have so many traditions from Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam and many of the other Ahlul Bayt members, where they talk about thinking and then speaking, right? Think about what you're going to say and then speak it. Right, we have traditions where the Imam says, I'm paraphrasing the hadith, that a fool will speak first and then think. But the wise person thinks and then he speaks. Right? And you see this again in history and even in today's day and age. How many people just go out and blurt out anything they want to say on TV, on the news, and social media, and then they have to think about it, and then they have to do damage control. They'll have their spokesman and this person and that person come and try to explain what that person said. Well, if they just were stopping to think a bit and then they spoke, they wouldn't have to play that spin and, you know, put a spin on the words. They would actually say what was actually, you know, what had to be said at that particular time. And so Allah shows us in this passage to be careful of these individuals, right? This was not only for the time of Rasulullah. 1400 years ago, these are living verses that you and I have to think about. Where do we get our news from? Who do we follow? Who do we take as our role model, as our leaders? Right? When we see, when as we go through these verses over the next few sessions and see these 10 traits, you know, you'll be able to see what kind of people Allah is warning us about. And then when we go home and look at these verses and then look at the news with this filter of these 10 ayat of Surah Qalam, we'll be able to really see the realities of the world that we live in today. Let me end with one last slide, which is just some points for you and I to reflect upon these two verses. And again, these are based directly from these three verses that we've looked at tonight and the traits that Allah has mentioned. Number one is that the leaders, or the leader of a family, the leader of a community, the leader of a society, and whatever other group you have outside of these, they should never simply listen to the masses and, you know, and succumb to the pressures and do what a leader is not somebody who listens to everybody and then follows the majority. Yes, listen to everyone. Everybody has a valid opinion to give. Everybody has things that they can share. But however, we understand from religious perspective that the leader has to make his own decision based on the overall good. Now this becomes a problem because we live in a democratic society. So we all get to vote for our prime minister, our mayor, our premier. Fine, no problem. That's okay to an extent because that's the system we have. We don't have anything better today in our countries. But we also have to keep in mind when it comes to our communities, and this is where the challenge and the pitfalls happen, is that globally, and again, I'm not speaking about Edmonton, so don't get me wrong. I don't give examples of here, but We have problem when you have religious organizations which are run by irreligious people. When you have committees that are formed by individuals who don't know the first thing about religion, but yet they say, come and give me your homes money. I will manage $100,000, $200,000. You don't even have knowledge of religion. How are you going to use the 12th Imam's money when you don't know the basics, the ABCs of religion? But unfortunately, our communities are founded on a principle of democracy. So we have an AGM every 2 years, or a non-profit institution will have an AGM every 3 years or 4 years, and the people will vote on who is the most worthy person to lead. Most of the times, it's the person who has the most money in the community. It's the person who has the most influence, who's got the loudest voice, who drives the nicest car, who has the biggest house in the community, and they get voted into office. Maybe that's not a problem. But then the challenge comes, we say, well, we all have an input in how the community is run. Even if the EC and the committee who vote are 10 people, if 9 people say we're going to do this, which it doesn't make sense, it's against religion, maybe it's a waste of community funds, because the majority vote for it, that one person doesn't have a say, he's out. And God forbid our communities involve the religious scholars. No, they're there on the pedestal. We'll have the alim with the rubber stamp. He'll, give his blessings that the moon has been seen, that this food is halal, that namaz time has started. But when it comes to running a center, no, we keep him at bay or we keep her on the side. And only if we need a rubber stamp of approval for something, we'll ask the Maulana to step in and give his opinion. Otherwise, he's just an employee. He's not on the board of making a decision for a religious community. Had Rasulullah run like that, had Rasulullah let the companions make the decisions, as Allah says in the Quran, listen to the companions, but when you're done, you make the decision, the Prophet, and you implement what you have decreed. If the Prophet listened to everybody around him, we can only wonder where the religion would be today. And so this is one of the things that we have to reflect upon, is how our institutions, not locally, but at the international level, globally, how are our institutions being run, right? If you have for example, the College of Physicians, or you have the Law Society of a particular province, I would wager that the Law Society has lawyers on the board. I would imagine that the College of Physicians or pharmacists, they have people who are in that profession who run that particular body. But when it comes to religious organizations, again, we don't have that. And we have to ask ourselves why we don't run in that same fashion. If we want to follow what the West does, let us follow that even in this particular aspect of our lives. And last but not least, and I'll end with this, is that when it comes to those who are seeking to corrupt, we need to be aware of them and their plots. And if we have to, expose such individuals to the community and to the society. We can't let people come and corrupt the society and just say, well, it's freedom of speech. We can't let deviant ideologies creep into our communities and say, well, you know what, we live in the West, so you can do what you want. You can say what you want. You can post on social media what you want, and we're not going to talk about it. No, when those people are corrupting the society, corrupting the community, the youth, the elders, communities have a moral obligation to ensure those people are known within the society so people don't go to those individuals. So they're not looked upon as being spokesmen, spokeswomen, representatives of a religious institution. And obviously the ways and means of how we expose such individuals is obviously unique for every case. But we have to keep in mind that we cannot let corruption fester within our communities or our society, and that we remain indifferent to that. Just as Rasulullah was very aware and he made sure that these matters were taken care of, so too us as believers need to do the same. We close and we ask Allah, as we continue in this blessed month of Ramadan, as we now have completed complete our 9th fast of this month of Ramadan, we ask Allah to give us the ability to continue to fast in this blessed month. We ask Allah for the ability to continue to stand for worship, to read the Quran, to think and reflect on the Quran, and to work about on the implementation of the ayat of the Quran into our day-to-day lives. We ask Allah to hasten in the return of our 12th Imam to bring about a government of justice, of fairness and equality. And we close by asking all the believers to recite a Surah Fatiha and to dedicate the thawab of the Surah Fatiha to all of the marhumin, the deceased from our communities, our families, our friends, the ulama who have left this world, the shuhada. Surah Mubarakatul Fatiha with before that one salawat upon Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.